I'm Patricia Camilleri, and in this series called Talking Books, I shall be asking my guests about their personal relationship with the written word. I'm very happy to have with me today Dr. Antonio Tofinho. Just a few words about him. He graduated Bachelor of Arts in Legal and Humanistic Studies in Law and Italian from the University here in Malta in 1996, Notary Public in 97, and obtained his LLD in 99. During his years at university, he was president of the Law Society in 1996 to 99. He was called to the bar in 2000 and graduated Magister Juris in International Law in the same year. And he now has a practice with his wife, Lisa, and his main areas of work include tourism law, civil litigation, telecommunications and fisheries law, and corporate governance. Antonio is currently reading, for his own personal and as well as professional interest, a Master of Arts qualifying course in Italian here at the university. Having said all this, however, I feel that those who knew Antonio at university we'll remember him chiefly for his Maltese plays written in usually rather ribald rhyming couplets that amused students for several years, achieving full houses, I might say, on several nights in the Sir Tamis Amid Hall. I hope that he has not become too serious an advocate to be reminded of those wonderful events.
Doesn't happen, no.
Welcome to you, Antonio.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here.
While preparing for this interview, I did, in fact, have a look in my files at home to see if I could find a program from one of those theatrical evenings in the hope of getting you to read some samples of your work. But perhaps on second thoughts, it was a good thing I didn't find it, after all. My recollection of the texts is that they were risque, but very clever at the same time. What are your memories of those evenings?
Very, very fond memories of life at university. I wish I just had some more time to continue doing what I used to do, because it used to be great fun to manage to do something which was, I used to think it was a bit of something of your own invention, and which could be perceived as being interesting by people in general. Maybe it was because it spoke like the language of people our age, but we used to try and make something which was fun, but at the same time within 35 inverted commas on each side, literary.
Of course. Your friends, in fact, you made actors of your friends.
Yes.
Really.
And that was the easy thing for me, because I had the privilege of writing things about people and idiosyncrasies of people which I knew about, and I could actually characterize some defects or some peculiar, let's put it like that, traits in my
idiosyncrasies,
and turn them into something which could be funny. Actually, where most of them are very people who are very in touch with the with the humorous side of their nature, fortunately, because if we didn't have humor, I think we'd all be in deep trouble. And it was, I have very, very, very fond recollections of those times, and I wish that one day we could find the time, all of us, to do some more things again. Mm. Because I was thinking of doing something, I had started writing something, but then
The pressures of life creep up on you,
and time becomes a luxury when at university time was
more or less your own,
a most precious belonging. But fortunately, I must say that most of the people who were my friends used their time well at university. Mm. So they involved themselves not only in the particular curricula which they were going through, but even in extracurricular activities, which I think they're very important.
Definitely, definitely. If you don't do that at university, I mean, as you say, when are you going to do it?
That's true.
When you were reading for your BA, I happened to mention you to one of your lecturers of Italian at the time, and he immediately started to bemoan the fact that you were only studying Italian as a secondary subject to your law studies. And I, I think I can risk embarrassing you by saying that he said that you were probably one of the best students he'd ever had. Were you ever tempted to ditch law and go for the arts? You clearly have a great love of the word, both written and spoken.
Yes, I still am, to tell you the truth. I still am very tempted, so I haven't decided, as they say in Italian, cosa farò da grande. I don't know. I am going to be 35 years of age this year, but I don't exclude anything. Unfortunately, what I do takes a lot of... is very voracious with the rest of the day, so it takes a lot of time. But I don't exclude the possibility of one day deciding to go into becoming a full-time academic. I'd be very interested, actually, in perpetrating my perpetrating and perpetuating maybe my studies of Italian or other literatures, because I'm very fond of literatures and recently even linguistics. I'm interested in linguistics, but I'm not that well versed with linguistics. But it could be that one day I were to decide to go one way instead of another. I'm not too sure about it. What is for sure is that definitely I will never cut off the sort of umbilical cord which I have with these things.
Sure.
I feel it's...
The reason
it's
I was reading about Michele Bellanti, the painter, he started off life as a lawyer. Yes, and then he dumped law for arts and painting, went to Rome to study. And I think Malta is probably very pleased that he did.
Very brilliant painter, Michele Bellanti. He left some very interesting material. And we can even talk about Paolo Conte, who is as well a lawyer. He's a lawyer by profession, and he comes from a family of lawyers and notaries. In fact, his father's a notary. He is actually a civil law lawyer. Until some time ago, he used to say that he used to still have an office in Asti, because he's Astigiano. He comes from Asti. He still has an office in Asti, which he used to open once a week. He used to say to escape from fantasy, so he can have one day a week when he can practice his own practice. Mm. We've recently been to a concert of his in Taormina. It was amazing.
Superb, really, really superb. I can just imagine him actually saying something like that.
Yes, excellent content. His lyrics are unbelievable.
Where did your love of books come from? What do you think inspired you? Was it something from home, some inspired teacher?
Well, I think it's a bit of everything, because at home, yes, both my parents are interested in books. My father more in art, and my mother used to be a teacher as well, so this is very much into literature, etc., etc. So I've always lived in a territory where, in a fecund territory with books everywhere. I mean, we weren't the sort of people who used to just watch television and do nothing else. But then again, even some inspiring teachers at my first school and then at my second school afterwards, they do leave a mark. They do leave a mark when they manage to transmit to you their love towards a particular... towards a particular author, towards a particular piece of prose. I mean, I think it's a bit of everything. I think also it's my natural curiosity which makes me want to experiment and discover things more and more. But I've always been very much in love with the written word, I must say, in all its forms. In all its forms.
Exactly. In fact, what we're going to talk about really mainly today is poetry. So poetry, I imagine, would be an important part of your interest in literature.
Very much so. Very, very, very much so. In fact, recently I've tried to upgrade my readings by... I was in Italy and I purchased some tomes, the very large tomes of Montale and Saba and all these relatively modern Italian authors who are, I think, superlative, although they're difficult to understand the meaning of many of the things they talk about, because it's full of symbolism and replete with other things of that sort. But even the imagery which is evoked just by the sound of the words is almost enough to how can I say, to gain some interest and enjoyment out of them. Obviously, if we go back in time, I mean, I'm a great fan of Dante, and in fact, I was studying in regard to medieval times as well. I was very fond of what we used to study at university before Dante, the first writers in the court of Federico II, and the writers in Bologna and this sort of thing, and Cecco Angioleri. In fact, I had wanted to write a thesis about Cecco Angioleri because I was always very interested in, I don't know if I'm deviating, but I was always very interested in Goliardia, up to a certain extent. I used to write a bit.
In a way
which you could define Goliardico a bit. Well, I'm fonder of the poetry which is, if we're talking about older poetry, I am fonder of the poetry which is a bit more terra terra than of the poetry which is very ethereal, although obviously one cannot not appreciate. But if you were to ask me about the Divina Commedia, for example, I much prefer the Inferno to the sophisms and the theology that there is in the Paradiso or in certain parts of the Purgatorio. Why? Because it's actually more fun to read about. We can't define them as naughty people or people who are a bit more earthy than something which is a bit out of this worldly, I mean.
Well, in fact, I must say I was a little bit perhaps taken aback at your choice of book today. And when I asked you what you'd like to speak about, you said L'Inferno, obviously the first book of La Divina Commedia di Dante, and you sent me sort of scuttling back to my university notes and onto the internet. But obviously, given your background, I suppose I shouldn't really have been that surprised at the choice. It is a very physical book, particularly L'Inferno, obviously, as you've pointed out. When you first picked it up, when you first read it, when you read the famous first lines, what was it that struck you?
This book was a very big discovery for me and for most of the people my age, I think, who were reading Italian at A-level standard, because although we obviously knew about it, because bombarded as we are, especially in my teenage at the time, bombarded as we were by Italian culture, because there wasn't really
there were no other televisions,
anything else to compare to, apart from maybe TVM. But it was a great discovery to see that, okay, we had done, we had been through interesting literature before, like some two or three Shakespeare plays, but they always used to choose for Form 5 and Form 4, they always used to choose the most romantic Shakespeare plays, so it used to be Romeo and Juliet or
That's the Merchant of Venice.
Merchant of Venice, yes, which were good, and there is a lot of depth in them as well. But when you start reading the Divina Commedia, it's like you would have never imagined that, first of all, a word could have so many different interpretations. A particular situation, a particular two or three line phrase could be interpreted in so many different ways. And some people might find that very confusing.
But daunting, perhaps.
I used to find it actually very, very interesting to know that a page could be a labyrinth of different possibilities of things which could have happened, and I was very surprised to see that it was such a universal book, because Dante's idea was probably something like that, to do something which was quite a definite book talking about anything under the sun and beyond the sun and everywhere else. But I was quite surprised to see how wide-ranging and how daring he was, obviously, with the subjects he spoke about, with the content of the book, with the variety of the different subjects, different people. He talks about politics, he talks about philosophy, he talks about theology, he goes into everything. He's not afraid of condemning people who are still alive to an eternity in hell. He's not scared of putting priests and some cardinals in the lower depths of the inferno. And most of all, he is very, very pictorial in the way he writes. Maybe pictorial is not a word which explains very well what I mean, but there's so much in his words, so many images that can be evoked out of what he writes. Now, rightly so, one today tends to associate them with one particular situation. The visual imagery of the Divina Commedia, as we said, is today very much associated with
Doris illustrations. Definitely.
And actually, I think that they were very befitting. Doris illustrations are very befitting to the literature which they refer to. Another thing we were discussing before is Roberto Benigni's excellent performance.
Superb.
Was it last year?
Yes, last year.
It was something which made sure that a lot of people returned to their books, because you know how it is when you're involved in a profession or in a job which takes most of your time, it sort of how can I say, sucks out your love for literature. It sort of bleeds out your time and your energies, because it's much easier to go home in the evening and sit down in front of television and watch something inane than to read a book. But a day like that, because I was present, even I gate crashed at the Jesuit church in Valletta as well. I managed to come in as well over there. I felt like one of those people who used to go to the Beatles concerts and gate crash and rip their hair out. But it was an amazing experience, even to see him face to face, such a giant of the art, I mean. And
that's what he wants to do, doesn't he, really, Benigni? I mean, when he talks about his Serate Dantesca, he says, you know, I want to bring Dante to everybody. And he goes on the piazza, and he goes to America, and everywhere he goes, he's so good at declaiming Dante that he gets everybody enthusiastic.
The first thing I was always surprised about in his regard is that he knows apparently all the Canti by heart, which is, I mean, quite a feat in itself, I mean. But he's also aided by the fact that Dante's words, most of Dante's words, are still very fresh and very appealing to the people who hear them today, because obviously we won't go into the whole development of Italian out of Dante and how much it was effective to using the Fiorentino in as a basis for the Italian language you know today. But a lot of the words which you can read, which were written, 700 years ago, are the words which people still use colloquially to this very day.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone gifted like Benigni comes to the university or to one of the beautiful settings where he organizes this serata, like in front of Santa Croce in Firenze, I mean, people are just flabbergasted. And I think that people even don't just attend the performances, but they even check them out on YouTube, and because if you see the number of people who watch them on YouTube, it's an enormous number, especially certain particular canti are more favored than others. Obviously, the first canto and Paolo Francesca, the quinto canto, and the last canto, the one I believe he declaimed when he was in Malta.
It was
quite a That's an earth-shattering performance for most of the people.
You could hear a pin drop in the Temisami. It was amazing.
I always
feel that, in fact, La Divina Commedia is much more enjoyable when heard spoken out loud by somebody, obviously a good speaker like Roberto Benigni. But I remember hearing Franco Lanza. He used to give very good lectures in general anyway, but particularly the Paolo Francesca lecture, which I must have heard two or three times over the years, and he used to quote. It was just spellbinding. I mean, he just gave this wonderful image. You could just imagine these two spirits following each other in the air. It was superb. Nice. And there are these characters in the Inferno which are really unforgettable. Which are your favourites?
I could read the Inferno over and over again a million times. I don't think I've read it completely, but Characters like, you mentioned before, Farinata degli Uberti, with his dignity and unspoiled by the fact that he's in a tomba di fuoco.
Conte Ugolini.
Conte Ugolino with his children, very, very sad story.
Which really is a tearjerker, if ever there was one.
Really.
I don't think there was a dry eye in the lecture room when that was done during our lectures.
And even the spirits in the limbo, which we are taught now that it doesn't exist anymore, the limbo, but it was a very very interesting to see what people Dante used to place over there. With their great majestic personas stuck in an area where there's a lack of light, but still holding their dignity, still holding their knowledge, and basically many other people, because even the monsters, if we can call them monsters, are very unforgettable. Minos, Cerbero, and the many others there are. I mean, the masterful way in which even these semi-human, if we can say that, and semi-monstrous creatures conserve some characteristics of the human and some characteristics of the monstrous. Megera Tesifone Aletto, the Trerinni, and all these characters. Like, it's a very, very pictorial experience. I'm very surprised. I am very surprised that no one ever tried to. I think there was a very old film, but no one ever tried to put it on film or a sceneggiato. There was a sceneggiato in the 70s, I think, but no one ever tried recently to put it into something pictorial.
Maybe it seemed too sacred.
Probably. Even for the Italians.
Yes.
Which is very surprising.
Especially perhaps for the Italians.
It's true.
Perhaps its popularity lies exactly in this, that it shows humanity with its monstrous side as well as the good side, and that's something that obviously we can relate to as humans, whereas purgatory a little less, and certainly the sublime Paradiso even less again. More difficult for us to relate to those other situations.
Definitely, because the higher you go, I think it's the more he is expected to lose sort of the average reader, because the higher you go, the more you have to have a sort of some strata of knowledge in order to be able to really appreciate what's happening at the top. But at the bottom, most people can. I mean, I can see what there is without having to go into philosophy, into some concept in depth. Maybe the more you scale the rows and the steps up to heaven, the more difficult it becomes to really appreciate the text well, because the text is as usual impregnated with 100 meanings, but understanding most of them the further up you go is even more difficult, unless you have the classical training, which unfortunately at this day and age we don't really have anymore. Yes,
most of it would go over the average reader's head.
That is, if I can say that there's something in Italian life which is a bit better than ours, is that they have the Liceo Classico, where they do actually go into the older authors, the classic.
Well, they still do Latin and Greek.
And they still do Latin and Greek, at least. I mean, I don't think it should be compulsory, but it could be interesting to have it as an option for people. I don't know how much it would be interesting for it if you also learn Latin and Greek, but it could be made interesting.
Absolutely, I think that's part of the problem, isn't it? That
I think
it wasn't made interesting at all.
Yes, I think in my pensionable age, I might go to come back to university to do a Latin and Greek classics course. If it's still offered, it's still offered.
Yes, we do have a department of classics. Most definitely.
I think you found the most enjoyable.
No, it is.
It'd be very interesting.
There's one character which I like very much, Brunetto Latini, who Dante knew well, and Dante admired him very much for his the way he thought. He was a notary. He was a teacher. There's one of my favourite bits is when they've had their discussion. They've talked together about various people, And then I think it's, I hope that I'm going to get this right, because otherwise my Italian lecturers will be ringing me up and telling me what rubbish. I think he runs off at a certain point, back to his friends or to his... And it's described in Italian, I don't remember the quote in Italian, that he rushed off as though, almost with the speed of somebody who has just won the Palio. And I remember reading that and thinking, my goodness, you know, there is no difference between 1300 and 2000 and whatever, because one could actually feel, one could know exactly what he meant, because we still see it today, that the winner rushes off in that hurry.
And in that episode, the Brunetto Latini episode, it's very interesting to see Dante's reaction, because I haven't talked about even the fact that Dante's personal involvement in the episodes, in his meetings with the people. It was very, very, very sad to find that his one of his mentors was actually condemned to an eternity of hell. But things as they stand, as they stood at the time, he had to be per forza di cose over there, unfortunately.
Anyway, unfortunately for us, our time has run out
already.
And I'd just like to say thank you very much, Dr. Antonio Tofinio, for coming to the studio to talk to us a little bit about L'Inferno and to have put across, obviously, your love for La Divina Commedia. And I think that that warmth has definitely come across today in this interview. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
My guest on the program today was Dr. Antonio Tofinio. I do hope that you can join me again next week, when I shall be talking to the well-known novelist, Patricia Duncker. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.